Blog Talk Radio.
Today's show, we're going to speak on the March for Life, which just took place. Under the brutal cold and onset of possibly the biggest blizzard on record, pro-life marchers gathered at the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., to protest the evil called abortion. Despite the cold and snow, there was a considerable mass of people present, though smaller than last year, because I suspected the weather was not that great. And many individuals, many groups that hire bus companies or pay their spots in RFK Stadium to park the buses and so forth, were concerned that they could be stranded in Washington, D.C., not be able to return back to their respective states. Because the storm, this blizzard is out there taking place now, I'm speaking to you right now, is engulfing pretty much the entire East Coast and affecting over, I believe the media said, 30 million people or so. So out of precaution, a lot of people decided not to join it, but despite their absence, a lot of people did show up. The majority of them were young people. There was a sea of young people of all ages, mainly high school age and college age. So there were a lot of young people present in the march. There were also atheists present and feminists, those atheists and feminists who support life, but in a more secular manner and not in a religious manner, which most of the March for Life marchers tend to present themselves like or as in regards to how they present their pro-lifeness, if you will. Unfortunately, I was not able to attend myself, but I did go previous years, and it was pretty much a good experience. The only thing I had issue with the March for Life was that, unfortunately, some of our separated brothers and sisters in the Protestant faith used the event to proselytize. I remember I was standing with a group of fellow Catholics. We went, different parishes got together, and we went, and there was a bishop present, and this guy just came and was handing out pamphlets and was trying to shove a pamphlet right in the bishop's face. And the pamphlets pretty much was attacking the Pope, like those Jack Chick type pamphlets. And there was a couple of those groups like that were proselytizing. They weren't focusing on the whole idea of marching for life, the whole idea of pro-life. They were pretty much using the event to promote their own nonsense, to proselytize other faiths and whatnot. And I think they really need to do something about that, because that causes conflict, causes debates, and even though the media tends to black out these events, you still see them there. There are newspapers there, they walk among the crowd, and I'm sure they would love to make a big story of the two Christians from different denominations, different groups, fighting or arguing over doctrines or whatever, instead of promoting life, which is the purpose of the March for Life. It's not supposed to be a religious march per se, but promoting life, to promote life and the end of abortion. So that's pretty much my main complaint of the March for Life, is these people going out there and taking advantage of the event to proselytize. However, I was with my brothers and sisters in the pro-life movement in spirit and prayer, and of course supporting them on social media, just like I'm doing right now on Sacerdotes Radio, and also on Twitter and other social networks. Presidential candidate Carly Fiorina was present and spoke to the marchers, and of course Father Frank Pavone, Cardinal Sean O'Malley, and many others were present there, or there are known among the Catholic world. And as usual, a few hateful pro-abortion protesters stood on the sidelines trolling the participants. However, they were drowned out by the cheerful prayers and songs and chants from the pro-life marchers, many of them who, like I told you, are young and have that energy, that youthfulness of being cheerful and creating these chants. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Roe v. Wade has got to go, and things like that, saying different kinds of chants or slogans like that, energizing the crowd. So kudos to those brave soldiers for life for going out there and risking their lives, literally, because of this huge blizzard that's taking over the region, and bearing the cold. It's not that easy to walk in the cold. I mean, I like the cold. The cold does not bother me. I was born in New York, so the cold was part of my experience. I got used to it. I adapted. It doesn't bother me. But a lot of these people come from other states, from the south, from places that don't really get that cold. And for them to march in that cold, brutal weather, and on top of that, it's a blizzard on its way. It takes a lot of nerve, a lot of bravery, and kudos to them. God will reward you for bearing the weather and the other things that go on with the march, fatigue from walking and so forth. To march there and call for the protection of all human life in all its stages of development. Now, the March for Life was started by the late Nellie Gray, who passed away. And she decided to do this march in order to call attention to Roe versus Wade, which was the decision by the Supreme Court that legalized abortion on demand throughout the 50 states. And pretty much the case involved Roe, whose name is Norma McCorvey, who ironically became Catholic and is now pro-life, and she vowed to spend the rest of her life trying to throw out this decision to undo Roe v. Wade. So hopefully she will be successful, and she has millions of people behind her in the pro-life movement. Anyhow, she sued for pretty much the right for bodily autonomy and whatnot, all these different silly arguments that pro-choice, pro-abortion people would like to use in order to promote their agenda. It's my body, I could do whatever I want. The state, the government has no say in and what I do with my body and whatnot, which I find it like a silly argument. It's ridiculous. I mean, I understand that, yeah, we have our bodies and we control it, and nobody should tell us what to do with our bodies, right? But if you think about it, in society, any society, even in America, which values and prides itself as being the land of the free, we're not really in control of our bodies, because if you do something wrong, if I do something wrong, we get arrested. A cop will hold us down, and we try to resist arrest, he or she will probably beat us until we comply. And that doesn't speak to anti-bodily autonomy. I don't know what else does. When you have a police officer or any agent of the state or whatever arresting you, putting plastic handcuffs on you, like with those protesters from the Black Lives Matter movement, that they get arrested, they sit on the street, block traffic, and they get arrested. Now, if we truly have control of our bodies, if we really have this autonomy of the body, then arrests and all these other things, restraints and all these other things that control the body will not exist and will not be tolerated under the law. But, of course, the notion of bodily autonomy exists in theory, in a sense, in philosophical theory, in a sense. But in the legal, from a legal standpoint, it's really not existent. It really doesn't exist in the society, because as long as you can be arrested, you can be arrested or whatnot by a police officer or agent or whatever, then we cannot say that bodily autonomy truly exists in the nation. But again, these are just coined terms, phrases that these people use in order to promote this agenda, in order to have an argument, pretty much, because what real argument is there to defend the killing of unborn children? And some of them even go as far as saying that they are not children, that they are just masses of cells, of tissue. And science, biology, embryology tells us otherwise. The human life goes through many stages. It starts from conception and becomes a zygote, then an embryo, a fetus, then it's born, it's called a newborn, an infant. Continues to grow, a toddler, young child, pre-adolescent, adolescent, teenager, young adult, adult, and then it continues from there, senior, and then eventually the human dies. And the human is human in all of these stages, because he or she is just going through life, developing, changing, getting older. It's not that when you're born, you miraculously become a human being. A human being. That's ridiculous. And it's very unscientific. Yet, there's people out there in the pro-abortion movement that present these ideas as arguments. And they're convinced that they won the lottery, so to speak, in reason, in rationality, by using these crazy arguments. So, the March for Life was started in response to this case of Roe versus Wade by Nellie Gray. And this has been going on ever since the 1970s, 73, 74, around there. Because the case was started, the case was decided on January 22nd, 1973. So the following year, 74, was when Nellie Gray started the March for Life, and it's been growing ever since. They started with a little bit of people, and then every year it kept on increasing, 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 to now hundreds of thousands of people show up to this march in this cold weather and whatnot. And recently, yesterday, under the presence of a blizzard, of all things. So, I don't anticipate that this march is going to disappear anytime soon. And it has been granted permit all of this time, despite having Barack Obama as president, probably the most pro-abortion president ever in history. And this march is going to continue until abortion is eradicated, until abortion is aborted in America. And hopefully that will trigger a chain reaction throughout the whole world and bring abortion to disappear from the face of the earth. Because it's 2016, we're in the 21st century, we have so many innovations in science and in medicine and so forth, and for abortion to exist, it's just crazy, it's just mind-boggling that this procedure, this barbarism exists in the 21st century where we allow the killing of unborn children. And we have ultrasound, even with the first version of the ultrasound, black and white, you could see the child in there moving about, sucking his thumb, jumping, doing backstrokes and so forth. We see all of that there, and yet people still say that that's not a human being, that that's not a life. And now we have somewhat colorized ultrasound, even four-dimensional, three-dimensional ultrasound, where it looks on the screen like you're actually looking through the womb, like you're looking on the TV, like if the child is right on your lap or on your arm or something. And we have this technology, and still people out there say it's just a blob of cells. I mean, you should have learned this in 5th grade, 6th grade, around there, about gestation and how life develops. For them to say that that's not a child, that that's just a blob of flesh or whatnot, it's just either they're being willfully ignorant or they really did not learn this stuff from science. And that's scary indeed. Some people out there complain about fundamentalist Christians, that they reject evolution and the Big Bang Theory and so forth in favor of the literal six-day creation. And they call them idiots and morons and whatnot. Yet here we are, people who support abortion, and they deny the very basic knowledge that we have of reproduction and the development of human life. Gestation of the fetus, the embryo, the egg, ovulation, what happens after ovulation and fertilization and so forth. It's just mind-boggling. I really cannot find another word to describe it. And something has to give. We have to do something. There has to be an emphasis on education and science in America. Something has to be done in order to get people, the next generations that come after us, to really understand what life is, what human life is, and how it develops. And that it doesn't become a human being miraculously after it comes out of the mother. The child is a human being even before and after birth. And all these ideas that the unborn child is a parasite or parasitic or whatnot, or it's part of the mother's body, it's just ridiculous, and it has to be corrected. We have to correct these errors, this ignorance. Now, while the fetus and embryo does have a symbiotic relationship with the mother, that doesn't mean it's wrong. I mean, that's nature. That's the way human beings evolved. If you believe in God, then you believe that that's how God created it, how God designed it, how God allowed it to evolve into that procedure, if you will. You cannot go and call it a parasite or parasitic. That's just the way it is. Just like we grow fingernails, we shed skin. Every 3 months or so, we replace all of the cells of our bodies, except for some cells in the brain. We eat, we chew our food. It goes through the esophagus via the peristalsis and so forth. To say that these things are not normal or whatnot, it's would be ridiculous. Of course they are normal. That's the way the human body was designed. That's how it evolved throughout space and time on Earth. And then the idea that this is my body, I could do whatever I want with it. Yeah, your own body, yes, but if you're pregnant, there's two bodies. There's the woman's body, the mother, and the child. And guess what? The child has his or her own DNA. It's not the same DNA, because remember, in order for a human to be conceived, it needs chromosomes from both the mother and the father, a male and a female. To date, women do not use the process of parthenogenesis or self-procreation in order to reproduce. Human women do not do that. They need to be with a partner, with a male partner that's capable of fertilizing an egg with his sperm. And his sperm has the chromosomes with his information and his generations before him information, his father's information, mother's information, all the way down to the ancestors of that time, of that genealogy. Same thing with the mother. The egg has the DNA from her side of the family. And when the egg and the sperm connect, when the egg is fertilized, there's an exchange of genes, of chromosomes, that begins to tell the cell how to form, how to develop. And not only does the child have separate DNA from the mother, but a separate blood type as well. And then when you get into the question of sex in regards to male or female, how can the woman say, that's my body, if she's pregnant with a boy? Is she a boy? Is she a man? So these arguments on my body and so forth are just ignorance, science illiteracy, for lack of a better term. And again, these are just rationalizations, self-defense mechanisms that people use, these so-called pro-choice, pro-abortion people use, in order to justify this heinous act called abortion. And there's just so many different ways to have an abortion. I don't even have the time right now to get into it, but they sometimes burn the fetus with this saline solution, or they dismember the fetus piece by piece. And it's just, or they use a pill to solve the fertilized egg or not, or prevent it from implanting in the uterus. It's just disgusting. It's just this anti-life culture of death, as St. Pope John Paul II called it, that exists out there, that promotes these ideas and with a straight face, like it's nothing. To me, there's some sense of psychosis there present. Clearly, a mentality of utilitarianism. And there's studies out there that show that people that tend to think in a utilitarian way are prone to being psychopathic. And it makes sense. If you can easily think that an unborn child can be killed, dismembered, poisoned, burned alive, have his or her head crushed, there's something wrong. Something's going on. How can you, who in their right mind would think that that's justifiable? Under any reason that that's justifiable. Now, some people may say, well, what if the mother's life is in danger? Well, usually a mother does anything to protect her offspring. And we see this in the animal kingdom a lot, and of course among human beings. How many mothers out there will be willing to take a bullet for their children? They're willing to get eaten by dogs or whatever, or a bear, just to protect their children. Or if there's a fire in a home, the mother doesn't get out and leave the children there. If she has an infant or a toddler or whatever, she doesn't just go and throw herself out the window to rescue herself. Every man for himself mentality, and leaves the baby in the crib or the toddler in the nursery in the house or whatever, and makes a run for it and leaves the kid there. No, I never heard of a mother that will do that. Usually they will go frantically going door to door, room to room, looking for the child, to rescue the child. And many times getting killed themselves just for the child to survive, to live. So this whole idea of we have to put the mother before the child is just not only selfish, but it really contradicts nature, how we are programmed in a sense to protect offspring, specifically mothers and parents. They're hardwired to protect their own young. So the whole pro-abortion movement, the whole so-called pro-choice movement, is based on irrationalities and falsehoods and rhetoric that really is illogical. It's not scientific, and it's very immoral. There's a lack of a moral compass with people who hold these ideas of so-called pro-choice, pro-abortion, and whatnot. All human life is sacred. All human life needs to be protected. And some people go to the extreme to protect animal life more than human life. Now, humans are animals, yeah. They're part of the animal kingdom. But human beings are different. They have free will. They have intelligence. They have self-awareness. Other non-human animals, while they know how to survive in the nature, they're not always that successful at doing so. If there's a volcanic eruption, if there's a flood, if there's a disease, animals don't know what to do. They'll make a run for it as best they could, but many times they fail. They all die. They get killed by nature, especially if it's a disease. They don't go into a pharmacy and get medicine or conduct operations. They just suffer and then die off. That's what we see is extinctions all throughout the animal kingdom, unfortunately. But the human being is different. We could think. We know what to do most of the time. And when we don't know what to do, we figure it out. And we are able to protect ourselves and our brothers and sisters in the animal kingdom, if you will. Even with the plant kingdom, we know how to protect. We try our best to protect different species. So, to a certain sense, it makes more sense to protect human life. Because without human life, then that intelligence wouldn't exist, that free will, that self-awareness wouldn't exist, that we're allowed to protect the rest of the animal kingdom, the plant kingdom, and nature in general. So again, the March for Life, kudos to all the people that participated. And we have to continue fighting against abortion and celebrate one day when abortion, Roe v. Wade, is overturned and abortion is illegal all throughout the world. And we have to continue fighting and praying for that day to come. Thank you for listening. God bless. And Mary keep. And stay safe out there in that blizzard. Stay home. Read a good book and don't risk your life out there.